I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
Leinster could have me 5 mil a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Moe!
Robbie Weekly.
Little reverse pass, and
hello, everybody, and welcome to the 42 Rugby Weekly. Hope you're having a great week so far. It's Gavin Casey with you here. We're going to look ahead to some big URC games, talk about Interpro transfers, Ulster's injury crisis, what's going on at Connacht in general, because my esteemed colleague Murray Kinsella was over in Galway just yesterday, so he can fill us in on what the vibes are like over there. Hey, just a general rugby chat, Murray. How are you getting on, firstly?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Flying it, thanks. It's a really kind of a vibey time of year in general, but I think in rugby as well, it's just been such an enjoyable few weeks. I know some Connacht fans and certainly most Ulster fans would probably argue that point, but I guess just we've seen some brilliant games from the Six Nations onwards. Munster down in Pretoria, Leinster La Rochelle, titanic kind of games, season defining games, and they're set to continue in a big way over the next few weeks, and it's just an exciting time of year, isn't it?
Yeah, we've kind of lurched from big story to big story and from this province to that province. And I kind of feared this season that it would drag on because we started with a World Cup, obviously. We started early. We started with a big bang with all the emotional investment that went into that. And there was a bit of a lag for the weeks afterwards. And you thought it's going to be such a long campaign, but that's not the case at all. And as we've discussed recently, the run-in for URC is class. Obviously, Leinster in the hunt for Champions Cup, plus the most titanic two-test tour to come in July with Ireland, South Africa. And my anticipation for that builds every day, pretty much. So there's loads of stuff to happen in between now and then at the same time. And even in a week like this, where you think it might be a bit quieter, there's plenty going on, as you've mentioned there in your intro. So, an exciting time of season. And I think the improvement in the quality of the URC becomes more and more apparent every single season. The race is really on. It's so tight. Every single point counts, and that's a great place for it to be, given that the other three provinces, aside from Leinster, don't have that secondary focus.
The biggest indicator of that is the fact that Leinster are playing the Stormers this weekend, and they kind of have to win. Like, not have to win, but it would be very convenient for them to win. Whereas in the past, if this South African tour was taking place at this stage of last season or the season before or any season prior that I can remember, you could afford to actually come away with 0 points and probably still top the table. Like, there's that element of jeopardy involved in this for Leinster, which is indicative of the rise in quality. We'll swing back around to their game with the Stormers later on. I wanted to start with Connacht because as much as you've covered games there over the last 12 months or so, it might have been your first time in a while going over there just for a sort of a media day, speaking with people, being on the ground. How did you get on, firstly? What was the day like?
Well, I shamefully hadn't been there for a few months. And as soon as I drove up the College Road, obviously heading towards the what used to be known as a sports ground, is now the Dexcom Stadium, you just see the works in progress. They've broken ground to start the building. And I immediately got excited at the sight, the sound of it. It was a nice sunny day in Galway, which is always really special. Galway is one of my favourite places in the world when the sun is shining and there's that buzz around the place. And they've started working on the new training centre, the High Performance Centre, and that's going to be ready for March next year, as they plan at the moment. And you drive in past it and you look at the Clan Terrace on your left, and that's going to go. That's getting knocked over in June once the season is done to build a new big north stand there. And, you know, that I almost got a bit nostalgic looking at it because it's a decrepit old stand, really, but it's special on the great days there in Galway. Obviously, the real faithful Connacht fans cramming into the place, singing the Fields of Athenry, and they've had some amazing moments, but definitely looking towards the new era. You go into the back car park, that's where they're going to have the makeshift changing rooms next season because they've got to knock the existing buildings to build a new one. So they're going to have a very temporary setup out the back there. But when it's finished, and I was going over the plans again yesterday down there, and I was being pointed to, this is going to be here. This is going to be the indoor half, you know, covered indoor half pitch. We're going to have the brand new gym here. We're finally going to have a canteen for our players to actually have their meals. At the moment, they just grab their food and they either sit in their place in the changing room or they squeeze into the players' lounge. And little things like that are basics elsewhere just haven't been there for Connacht. When I arrived, they were training on the 4G pitch, you know, their drones flying overhead and really good energy on the pitch And I've come in at times in the past and they've been out the back pitch in an actual bog training. And you can see that it's slowing down their sessions, not allowing them to do what they wanted to do. Now they're on a high class surface all the time. And yeah, I have to say I came away from it very excited. The new stand is going to be huge. It's going to hold 7,000 people, seating and standing. There's going to be a massive hospitality kind of conferencing area so they can obviously make money even when there's no rugby on there. A coffee shop even on the ground floor throughout the week, which will be open and keep people coming and keep people in the area. And yeah, just from the players, I think they're so excited to have the kind of top class facilities that have been taken for granted elsewhere for what, like over a decade in some instances now. That'll make a massive difference to how they train and probably even attracting players. Like if you know that's there, it's a more attractive proposition. So yeah, on the whole, like I think there's a great awareness of the challenges. Obviously, we've been talking finances recently, and that's going to be one, particularly when you're redeveloping a stadium, that's even more important. But there's an optimism down there based on, yeah, that new facility, but also, as you might get into, the squad, Gavin. We've kind of mentioned it a few times, but there's a real focus on getting guys who are Connacht born and bred through that pipeline. So all in all, yeah, really enjoyable visit. JJ Hanrahan was talking. He's had a great first season, obviously, and he's loving it there. Scott Fardy as well, like a World Cup finalist in the building, is always handy. And he said he's learning lots in his first season, really, as a top-level assistant coach. So it was a great visit, I have to say.
So wild and unkempt was that back pitch that you could have actually made the argument that to train on it would be to interfere with the local ecosystem. It may have been even frowned upon by conservationists. Yeah. And like just to all of the upgrades in Connacht's infrastructure that you have outlined there, it kind of takes me back to the chat we were having on Monday where we were saying the other provinces, as in the other three provinces versus Leinster, haven't been especially well run compared to Leinster. Now we qualified or clarified afterwards that Connacht don't really belong to that conversation. They have fewer resources anyway. And also, all of these, all of this construction, all of this development that they're undertaking, the long-term benefits of it are absolutely enormous. You can't feel them yet, and you won't feel them even next year necessarily. But like for Connacht fans now, you know, if your kids wind up playing for Connacht or if your kids wind up going to watch Connacht in 20, 30 years' time, whatever, like that province, the organization should be in a far better place as a result of all of this. And I guess I just wanted to ask you, within the context as well of Munster redeveloping Thomond Park to the point that like the plan was to own your own stadium. We didn't really get to that on Monday, but I guess like you do have to credit them or certainly understand where they're coming from in terms of putting in place home grounds and all of the facilities around those and actually having their name on the, you know, on the paper, basically. The long-term health of the provinces on that front is definitely promising, right? Like they should be viewed as positive steps, even if they contribute to financial constraints in the short term.
For sure. Like that's part of it. You spend money to make money in the longer term. You're going from a capacity of just over 6,000 in the Dexcom Stadium as things stand, which they can expand to just over 8,000, as we know, with temporary seating, which they have to do for the big interprovincial games on a more regular basis. And now you're going to go to 12,000, just around 12,000, with probably scope to go bigger in the future if you want to do that. There's space there. And I think 12,000 is an ideal number because maybe even with Thomond Park, sometimes you can slightly overreach what you're actually going to feel on a regular basis. And sometimes in Thomond Park, when it's not full, it can feel a bit echoey, you know? And I remember speaking to La Rochelle and they said they really considered going bigger than 16,000, but they wanted it to be packed all the time. They wanted there to be this constant demand for places. And they actually have scope to expand, but at the moment they're happy just to have it crammed every single time, to have people clamoring for tickets and fighting for tickets and have that energy. And listen, Connacht probably won't feel 12,000 every time unless they take a great leap on the pitch. And it's brilliant to have that space. And on the big days, they will fill it. And their plan is for there to be more of those big days. And yeah, it's a big investment. 45 million in total for the whole project. 20 million coming from government funding. And the other 25 is It's from Connacht's reserves, which in fairness they've managed well. CVC money from a few years ago, obviously the naming rights, donations as well, and obviously a bit of credit facility stuff as well. So they've it's a big sum to spend, but I agree it's going to pay off in the long term. Even now with the pitch, like all the schools finals and the provincial games can happen on that pitch. You can play a lot of rugby on that pitch amid the really bad weather. I was lucky it was sunny yesterday. And it's always nice going down towards the end of the season. And even yesterday, everyone was mentioning, you know, it's not always like this. And it's not. It rains a lot and you need those facilities to keep running finals, because that's where your next homegrown players are going to get a taste of it. And definitely that was another impression I had. We were talking about it earlier this week, Gav. We're excited about Matthew Devine breaking through. We've been waiting for this. And he's definitely causing a buzz in Connacht for Hugh Gavin to start taking those steps when he moves on to a senior contract as well next season. And there's other guys in the academy, including Matthew's younger brother, John, who was a really impressive centre for the Ireland under-20s. And then in the senior team, you're already seeing the likes of Kyle Ford and the Murray brothers and Dylan Tierney-Martin, Owen de Butler, Shane Jennings. These guys are starting to make strides into a squad that already we should flag includes guys like Caelan Blaydon, Jack Carty, Tiernan O'Halloran, absolute stalwarts of the province who've been flying that flag for a long time. But my sense is that there's, like everywhere in Ireland really now, it's kind of doubling down on that model of producing your own players, because fans love it. It's obviously cheaper than bringing in high profile signings from abroad. Or lots of them, and you still need those guys to supplement what you're producing. Also, hopefully, eventually you get them through onto the much discussed central contracts, and that in turn gives you bigger scope to do more. So there's lots of reasons why it's important, and yeah, I think Connacht are really, really focused on finding a few more gems like those guys and polishing them off, and they'll continue to do. Connacht deserve credit for their recruitment. I think they've been, like, there have been a few misses, a few duds, as happens everywhere, but they've been very good at picking up unheralded players. Like Mac Hansen is probably a good example. Didn't come with any fanfare, but has proven to be an incredible signing, including from me, Gav. In fact, my reaction was muted, as I recall, but he was a good example of how good they can be. Now, he's a top-end example, but they do pick up players from... I was interviewing Seamus Hurley-Langton yesterday, who, like, is a great pickup, a guy who no one in Ireland really would have heard of, was playing NPC in New Zealand, didn't pick up a Super Rugby contract, but they got him up and now he's a real fan favourite. And yeah, a guy with a great story. So we'll have that piece in the next couple of days. So yeah, they're doing their best with what is a relatively limited budget. They don't have the spending power that bigger clubs, even some of the other provinces, have. But the hope is that with the stadium being bigger, that gap will close.
So they have a strong core of homegrown players, and you mentioned their propensity for picking up unpolished gems and turning them into players who probably surpass the potential that maybe some of us would have seen in them. And they will hope that will be the case with Tighthead Temi Lasisi, who's joining from Leinster. You reported this during the week. Ben Murphy's set to join him as well. We've seen a bit of Ben Murphy. Obviously, it's come off for Leinster. He's 23, I think. He has 12 first-team appearances. Lasisi has maybe two, if I'm not mistaken. So to Connacht fans who haven't caught a glimpse of him yet, what kind of a Tighthead are they getting in Lasisi?
Well, he's big, first of all. He's 125 kg plus at this stage. Played loose head with the Ireland under-20s and has made that switch across, which hasn't been a great surprise given his size and his power. And he has that in bucket loads. And he's been working with really top-end props, obviously, for the last few years. The Leinster Academy is obviously highly integrated. And I think Connacht have had success also with that. That's part of the recruitment, is to look at other provinces and in particular Leinster and see what's available. You look at... I know Keane Prendergast came when he missed out on Academy with Leinster, but he's been an unbelievable success story. Sam Illo, indeed in the front row, has come across and has made a decent impact with the senior team. So I think that'll be heartening for those guys going across. Ben Murphy as well, a really clever, like a chip off the old block in terms of being tactically astute and intelligent, really good decision maker. And he'll add to that depth chart at scrum half, which looks exciting now with Blade and with Devine making that breakthrough. So yeah, that side of it is important. And it was, again, it was something we touched on, Birch touched on Wednesday, is, you know, the other provinces not being afraid to go and maybe take some guys who aren't going straight into the Leinster Academy. There's a few examples actually in the Connacht Academy already. Finn Tracy is one, I think, who's worth a mention. Has been really impressive for the Ireland under-20s. I know there's been a lot of chat about back three options in Ireland, maybe a lack of kind of real dynamic acceleration, but I think he has it in bucket loads. I think he showed that in loads of examples for the Ireland under-20s, and he's one of a few. James Nicholson went over there from Leinster, and there's a few other guys I'm not thinking of off the top of my head. So as well as your own pipeline, those Connacht born and bred players, I think it's good. If someone's not making the Leinster Academy and they're a really good prospect, give them a chance elsewhere, and Connacht are kind of doing that. So yeah, there's positive stuff there. And yet it's going to be a challenge to match up to the best sides. There's promise there, there's potential there, but it can be a brutal world, professional rugby, and all your excitement can be meaningless when you get onto those big game days and you need some big bruisers. So it's important that the likes of Finlay Beelam and Aki and Hansen are available as much as possible. You've seen how much they've missed Hansen. He just lifts everyone when he's on the pitch, not just because he's exciting and classy, but he's actually got a bit of edge. He's got that edge about him. You have to play Test rugby. The same is so true of Aki and Beelam. They're expecting Santi Cordero back very soon. He's training now, which is fantastic to see him on the pitch just after that cruel injury when he first arrived. And they kind of earmarked him for the number 15 shirt. So he's not going to be available this weekend, but he's very close. And hopefully he can finish this season strongly and then have a really good second year, because, yeah, he's going to thrill the supporters if he gets back to where he can be. He's a really evasive, brilliant player, but he has that experience as well, and he'll add that to the group. So they probably need to, yeah, they need to be fortunate on the injury front as well. I think they're going to tighten up their squad next year. They were around 45 or 46 this season, but I just think squads are going to be tighter, both budgetary constraints, but also because you have fewer games now in the URC. And even though it's not that many fewer, it's kind of been noticeable, I think, how those kind of two starts that a younger player might have had before just aren't there anymore, and it makes sense to have a slightly tighter squad. So yeah, there's probably more outgoings than incomings this summer in Connacht, but not a massive turnover either.
Mac Hansen is almost ready to go, so I doubt they'll risk him for this Dragons game at Rodney Parade.
No, they've ruled him out. They said yesterday that he's unavailable this weekend. Again, was the update from down there yesterday, and that's a pity. And they're carrying a few. I think there's 10 players maybe out injured at the moment, and we know that it is felt that bit more in Connacht when they're missing, particularly a guy as good as him.
He'll be back for Thomond Park though. That's the point, because you've got a week's break, and then it's Munster against Connacht. That's a game in which you would absolutely be prepared to unleash Hansen upon the world again, provided he's fully fit. It looks like he will be, like, based on what they were saying earlier in the week, at least.
Yeah.
I don't know about Santi Cordero in that sense. Like, I'm not sure if he'll be ready that soon, but and also I'm not sure if a debut at Thomond Park is optimal necessarily, as much as he'd probably tell you it would be. But, like, point being, just to have those guys back, even in consecutive weeks or in the space of 2 or 3 weeks at this pivotal stage of the season, it's a little bit like what we were saying with Matthew Devine. Just gives you that fresh impetus, just a little bit of a buzz in the team, on the pitch, in the stands. It's pivotal, you know. Like, Connacht made the playoffs and shocked a lot of people only 2 seasons ago. How often do we talk about, like, building a team towards a peak? And it's conceivable that Connacht haven't been at their best yet this season, and that they may find their best on this run, and I'm sure that's their plan. And suddenly the complexion of their season will have entirely transformed, if I'm not getting ahead of myself. We'll find out.
And it's so key to take, I think, maximum points from this weekend. It is a tough run-in with 2 Interpros and the Stormers. But in fairness to Connacht, the Interpros tend to bring out the best in them, and they tend to really get towards their kind of peak potential. And generally, I mean, I haven't looked at the table in a while, but generally, though, when you look at that kind of shield, they actually perform pretty well on the whole. So yeah, there's no reason why they can't be in that playoff mix, and that would be cool. We saw last season they went up, they got a quarterfinal, they went up to Belfast and they had a great win. And they probably enjoyed not having a great burden of expectation on them that day. And then they went off to South Africa and it didn't work out. But you never know. One other guy who's missing at the moment I meant to mention and is a really good example of smart recruitment under radar is Shane Bolton. He's probably been one of the success stories of the season because when he first came in from South Africa, there were injury issues, obviously settling in, a very big change for a young guy. But when he's played this season, he's been really impressive. He's very combative. He's very aggressive. I loved his exchange with Owen Farrell when they played Saracens and he kind of got under his skin and he clearly was enjoying that confrontation. But he's actually really quick as well. He can go outside, inside. He can use his power. I think he's one of the quickest guys in the Connacht squad. And he is apparently very kind of coachable. He gets things quickly and he grasps them, particularly defensively, which is a massive, huge job for any wing now. It's more important than your ability to finish almost because you can get exposed so readily. So he's Irish qualified as well, of course, and kind of came in from nowhere, really. When they signed him, you know, you're really scrambling to do your research. But he looks like a guy who could come into that Ireland mix even. Like, he looks like a player that, with his physicality and definitely that ability to grasp defence, that, you know, their attributes you look at. So again, that's key for Connacht, is pushing as many guys as possible into that mix, because when Bundiaki plays, when Mac Hansen play for Ireland, the pride in the western part of the country is incredibly, it's just huge, and to have more guys push into that mix would be brilliant for the province.
I don't think Shane Bolton at full tilt is a million miles removed from an Ireland conversation whatsoever. I expect him, it may be a bit soon for him in the summer now, just because he hasn't played a lot of rugby recently, but like, I think he's going to be, I'd expect him to make an Ireland debut this year, to be totally honest. I think he is that good. We also, funny, like you mentioned that Connacht's playoff run that I alluded to was actually last season. I think I said it was a couple of years ago. That sort of shows how much rugby has been played in the interim that it felt like about 2 years ago to me. But yeah, even more recent than I recalled. We spoke about Ben Murphy moving to Connacht. His younger brother Jack is going to be heading north, we think, to Ulster. That was part of your report as well during the week, Murray. And they're also adding Wilhelm de Klerk and Sam Berman, so a pair of centres as well as out half Murphy. I just wanted to ask you about Jack Murphy to begin with. We've seen him very recently with the Ireland 20s. People raved about him for a long time, even coming out of Praise and Bray. And given Ulster's shortcomings, or maybe rather just lack of senior options at out half, they needed somebody. This boy's a talent, clearly, very early in his career. Do you see enough sort of potential in Murphy so far to suggest that with a couple of years of senior rugby, playing under his dad conceivably as well, Richie Murphy, that he can become your franchise QB? He can be the kind of fulcrum in your attack and maybe the type of player that Ulster, without being unfair to Billy Burns, the type of player that Ulster haven't had in terms of like fans being fully convinced that this is our guy at 10.
It's so early. It's so early to say, but he has great potential, clearly, and he has a nous for the game and a instinctiveness around what the right tactical move is. And again, I would say that having your dad, Richie Murphy, who has such a great understanding and knowledge of the game is key. I can only imagine how interesting it was for him and Behin growing up and the three of them watching matches on the TV and discussing them at a level probably none of us really are. And he's done excellently for the Ireland 20s. He's kicked well. He's kicked from hand well. He has a nerve. And I love that moment when they were in France and he has that big celebration in front of the crowd. I like seeing that kind of stuff. I like seeing that that kind of character and that strength, I suppose, I saw it as. And there's going to be major challenges. It's such a different game stepping into professional rugby where you're going to have to direct guys 10, 15 years older than you at times, where you've got this pressure of the opposition trying to get to you, where you've got an even greater tactical burden and physically as well. That's always a challenge for any 10. Like, you've got to, the really good 10s, we often kind of tend to overlook how defensively strong they are and solid they are, or the fact that they get the job done there. But it's a really important job for any out half, is to be able to, or just not to be a kind of weak link in the defence. So all that is going to be a challenge, But I think there's great potential there. And again, it makes sense, doesn't it? If these moves are confirmed, that this is the chat that they're going to go north, that if they're not going straight into the Leinster Academy, then they can go north. You know, Sam Berman's probably one I did expect to go into Leinster's Academy, because I think he's been unlucky with injuries, but he's a very promising centre and has apparently been playing really good rugby in the AIL. Willem de Klerk has been excellent again this year for the 20s and looks like a centre with really good kind of rounded skills, a bit of edge in contact. And yeah, the potential is very clear, but I'm always kind of cautious not to think that these guys are just going to accelerate straight into starting teams. It does happen for some guys, though. It does happen. And if guys are ready, we shouldn't, you know, the province should not be afraid to accelerate them in there. And some guys can play test rugby very early, in their early 20s, as even we've seen in recent years. It's not impossible at all. But I think it's so great that each province has their own identity and definitely has a massive focus on their own part of the pipeline. But it's all the one pipeline, really. And to get as many talented players as possible playing all over the country is key. And like, you look at someone like Cian Prendergast, he's a Connacht man. He went there, he got his chance there. I remember talking to him, he got a phone call from Noel McNamara saying there's no space in the full academy in Connacht. Eric Elwood rings him 2 days later and says, there's a space here for you, and he's gone. And he's never looked back. And he's part of the fabric there now. And though I'm sure he's proud to have played for Leinster under-18s and have come through that part of the pipeline, now he's representing Connacht with great pride. So I think it's good to see those moves happening. And as we know, there's a bit of a logjam in Leinster, and they're still getting class players into their academy as well. So there's plenty of talent to go around.
It's an interesting point you make about players being ready at 20 or 21, and us as an Irish rugby culture, I guess, not being afraid to just let them off the leash at that point. Because particularly at out half, if you look at some of the guys in Ireland who are vying for that 10 spot now, in the vacuum left by Johnny Sexton, Jack Crowley has a jersey, he's 24. Harry Byrne, roughly the same age, I think he's 24 as well. And I guess those two guys in particular, you look at them as being at a very early stage of their career, a little bit unseasoned still, both improving, I think we can see in recent weeks, and playing well in big games, and it all augurs well. But I guess they're seen as like rookies to a degree. And you contrast that with like Romain Entemac, he's the same age as them.
Mm.
You know, he's 24 as well. He has 37 France caps. He's been playing in the top 14, which is like competitive games week in, week out for the last 3-4 seasons. The same with Matthew Jalibert. I think he's roughly the same age. He's been doing the same for Bordeaux. And I think of like, let's say, Finn Smith, who's, is he 2.5?
I was going to say, yeah.
2.5, 3 years younger than Crowley and Byrne. And, you know, he hasn't quite made a dent with England yet, but certainly is making his mark with Northampton Saints. I'm just curious, like, do you have any thoughts as to whether it's almost like an innate thinking us that we have to protect our young fellas, or is it something in the developmental stage that would maybe suggest that our players aren't quite ready at that age? Or maybe it's just all incidental. I guess, you know, it's a small sample size,
and there's a small window of availability here as well is partly the issue. You know, there's only four provinces, and there's probably a 28-year-old and a 24-year-old lad who's ahead of you in the pecking order to get past. Whereas in France, one of the strengths is they have 30 professional clubs, and there's so much opportunity. And even in the Premiership, there are more clubs, and there's the opportunity there. But I think what you're getting at is bang on. And I sometimes have to check myself in this regard. Like, a 20-year-old fella who's made it into one of the provinces is unbelievably good at rugby. And maybe I'm overcomplicating even talking about being able to boss guys who are older than you. They're just good at rugby and they're really confident on the pitch, these young players. And anytime someone does get the opportunity, there are examples where it goes badly for a young player, of course, but on the whole, it often goes well, and they do a good job because they're good at this sport. I even think of Exeter, when they started losing all that experience, kind of, was it 2 summers ago? Over the last couple of summers, I thought, oh, this is going to be really tough for them. But then young guys got into the team just because they had to, and they just started playing really well because they got the opportunity. Faye Waboso is a good example of that. Even Fisilau and a few others who've impressed there. So given the opportunity, very often young players just thrive. I think, I know Wales didn't go well in the Six Nations, but I think Warren Gatland has always had a bit of that in him as well, that these lads are unbelievably talented, and if I just give them a chance, they'll go and do well. So yeah, you're right. It's something that Irish rugby can probably remember more. I think it's always clear which 21-year-olds or 20-year-olds are definitely ready and have that elite potential. And I don't think there is a conservatism there, but yeah, on the whole, and it's probably happening a little bit more now. As I said, when you're tightening budgets, let's say you've got a decision and there's a 27-year-old lad who's been in your squad for ages and he's earned a few hundred K for being a squad player, and you've got a 21-year-old who you can pay, you know, 60-70 grand to, and they're probably at a similar level, then which way are you going to go? I'm not trying to discount experience now and flip completely, but maybe you've seen even a couple of examples of that with decisions around squads in the last couple of years. And yeah, you're right, Gav. Youth is good. You can actually win things with kids.
On Ulster's side of the equation, there was a really disheartening squad update issued by them yesterday, which rules Stephen Kitchoff out for the rest of the season. He's gone back to South Africa already. And then which reported, or which confirmed rather, that James Hume was a specialist surgeon for the knee injury he picked up last weekend. And, you know, I've actually a good few questions about Ulster, but just starting with Kitchoff, right? I've seen a few people like point the finger at Bryn Cunningham, who was sort of in charge of recruitment at the point at which Kitchoff was drafted in, or just pointing the finger at the province in general, saying like, you know, dreadful signing, what the hell were you thinking? And I'm like, if you transport yourself back in time to when they confirmed that signing, if at that time you were excited about it, I don't think you can point a finger at them like a few months later and be like, you fucked us, you know? Like, they were getting a World Cup winning Springbok, Lou said, powerful carrier, brilliant scrummager. I don't know that he hasn't hit like top form for Ulster in the limited time he's been there. I would say not even close. I don't think he's actually been disastrous either, to be clear. But like, injuries are just circumstantial. I'm wondering what you make of that signing now, to what extent like hindsight should even play a role in it.
Well, I definitely was excited when they announced it. And funnily enough, I remember Birch had big reservations about this at the time. And to give him his dues, he wondered why you would spend all that money on a loose head. And I can kind of remember going, why not? But he felt that there would be more kind of core elements of the team that you could have spent that money in, or more, even more influential positions. Now, for loose head, as we saw even in the World Cup with Ox replacing Kitsoff in a few instances, he had a massive influence on games. And in fairness, Kitsoff, I actually think he's had some really good games for Ulster, and I don't think the problem is him, really, to be honest. I think the problem is Ulster, and I don't know if any big name signing would have cured or fixed their malaise this season. I just think it was a tough thing to come in there and make an impact when there was other parts that weren't working well, and even off the pitch things weren't going well. But no, it hasn't been a successful signing. It's patently obvious now. He's gone pretty much straight away. As soon as he signed, as I said, I was excited. And then I heard John Dobson in the South African media, and Ulster had announced it as a 3-year deal, explicitly as a 3-year deal. And I heard John Dobson saying he signed a 2+1. And he basically said, I'm paraphrasing here, that he's coming home after 2. And I thought, okay, so they've already got that in their mind, that he's going over there for 2 seasons, then he's not going to do the optional third year. And that I thought was a bit worrying. But no, when he played, I don't doubt that he absolutely gave everything he could. He's probably had a very heavy duty couple of years where he's just played an awful lot of top end rugby, traveling a lot as well. And sometimes the body struggles with that. So yeah, at the time I'm one who struggled to flip-flop based on what's happened in the intervening period. I thought it was a really exciting signing. I thought it was the kind of world-class player that the provinces can benefit from bringing in, and that he would have had an influence on others. But to be honest, it seems like it was the dysfunction around him meant he couldn't really deliver his best, and it's a sad way for it to end, for him just to be heading off without any goodbye or anything like that. And I don't think there was much of a connection built there. And does it make you wary about similar signings? It probably does, especially when you again are being asked to rein in the spending. And that's a big part of it as well, that they're happy for him to go after a year and get him off their budget.
Yeah, it's one of those situations as well. Like, you're moving across the world at the drop of a hat to somewhere so different to Cape Town, and that is not a criticism of Belfast, by the way. It's one of my favorite cities. I've been up there like probably 60 times with boxing events and visiting friends and whatever, but like, just that it may have been one of those situations that you probably more often hear about in football, where he didn't really enjoy his time just being there, and that kind of bleeds into it all as well. And yeah, it feels like the right decision for all parties. It's just a pity it didn't work out. The Hume one, Mara, you know, again, there's a kind of a human element to begin with, which is just, it is galling for him. If you think back to the New Zealand tour, where he picked up a kind of an injury that really hampered him last season, and a lot of the commentary around Hume in the intervening period was that, like, oh, well, he had, you know, he's kind of gone off the boil, or he's dropped off the face of the earth, and he hasn't sort of recreated the fringe Ireland form that he had in around 2021-22. And I always thought that's such bollocks, like, that's so harsh on him, because like, the injury kind of botched his season. So it depends on what kind of an injury it is, and it depends on your anatomy and all these various things, but sometimes it just takes lads longer to get back to full speed from an injury like that. And now, you know, this knee injury, we don't know the extent of it yet, but when you're seeing a specialist surgeon, it's trouble. Like, it's going to be a long time out. I guess, like, it's hard to even ask a question about it, more so like, you just have to feel really sorry for a man, Ulster, right? Like, because he's an important player, and it'll lead me on to my next question about Ulster, but just to sort of point it out to begin with, like, it's a blow for them this season, a blow for him in a longer over a longer term period.
Because he's already become such an important figure, he captained them for the first time this season and has become a big leader and has matured massively. He's an interesting guy to talk to always. He's definitely matured in terms of being more collective in his viewpoint. But think back to 2021-22 season. He was their player of the season. He was the Rugby Writers player of the season, I think, as well. He was just on fire. And that was when Ulster were kind of at their peak under McFarland. They were definitely moving in the right direction. I remember specifically us having a chat before that tour saying they should give James Hume a test start against the All Blacks to reward his form and his quality, but also to continue the development of the squad. That's how hot he was at that time. And then he got that groin injury, and you're right, it was a serious one, way more serious than even he probably thought at the time. Of course, it ended his tour, but he was saying, I remember reading, I think it was in the Beltel, he really struggled with his lateral movement to get the power back in that. And it's such a core part of his game to be able to change direction sideways really rapidly. And it took a while to get back there, probably with his confidence as well. And you lose form, and it takes a while. But I think he's been, and because Ulster have been struggling, totally, I agree with you, gone under the radar, that he had been having a really good season this year. Excellent defender, makes good reads. He's really assertive in that regard. He's always had the ability to beat defenders, and he's got power through the tackle. He can offload. He's worked hard in his passing game and his awareness and his scanning and things like that. So along with the improved and increased leadership and that edge that he brings, which I think is going to be really important for this Ulster group, I think they need that newer or the younger kind of core of leaders to really grab hold of it. The likes of him, I know he's young, but Nathan Doak, Dave McCann, those lads who have big personalities and big expectations of themselves to kind of drive things on in the next while. So yeah, it's a huge shame that he's going to miss that. And even in terms of the Ireland depth chart, it's a huge shame that he's for the next while going to be out of it. I definitely think he was trending towards being back in that mix. And again, like, we've spoken so much about Antoine Frisch and his place potentially in Ireland's pecking order or otherwise, but Hume is definitely one. We know, like, Andy Farrell is captain. He's played Six Nations Rugby under Andy Farrell not that long ago in 2022. So it's a big shame, and it definitely puts a big dent in their kind of chances of finishing this season strongly. A couple of other injuries in that update, as you said, Doak was one of them, a groin. Jake Flannery, thigh. Tom O'Toole, who again has become an important guy, with an ankle. So there's already doom and gloom there, and the performance last weekend, though they won, wasn't particularly good. So it makes it even more demanding with Benetton, who are a good team. They're a really tough team to beat, with them coming on Friday night. So yeah, I think Richie Murphy and co will be hoping for a big home atmosphere to try and give them a lift this weekend.
Doak, Flannery and O'Toole are sort of being assessed as we speak, aren't they? Is that there's a determination to be made?
Yes, that's
week.
Correct. Yeah, sorry. They didn't rule them out explicitly. They said they're monitoring their availability. Yeah. But yeah, you just want to have as many guys getting a full week in as you possibly can. When again, they're right in that playoff hunt, and they'll think that they're well positioned to be in that top eight. But someone's got to miss out.
Yeah.
So they need all bodies on deck.
And I guess that it kind of leads me onto the question I was concocting in my head as I was rambling terribly about James Hume. But I guess, like, within the context of, say, missing a player like him now, who's been instrumental to anything good that Ulster have done this season, I would say, potentially missing some of the three guys we've mentioned there, including your starting halfbacks, arguably. O'Toole as well, obviously pivotal. Like, the team that beat Cardiff and was fortunate to beat Cardiff was already a really weakened team. And I would say Richie Murphy at the moment doesn't have Ulster at anywhere near full complement. Like, and I'm wondering to what degree do we have to be a little bit more tolerant or even kind to them in the context of their injury crisis now as they finish this season. We've been saying in recent episodes, we haven't really seen that bounce from Ulster that we hope to see under Murphy, and they still seem like a pretty fundamentally poor team. But you look at Munster, for example, and just the way they were able to surge back into something resembling their top form when they brought their big players back for the Bulls game. And I'm kind of looking at Ulster now through a similar lens. The context for Munster season for me now is it's not a lost season yet. There's loads to play for, but like a lot of it has been lost to just unbelievably unfortunate, an unbelievably unfortunate run of injuries. They haven't been monster that they can be, and maybe we have to look at Ulster the same way now, like rather than hammering them week on week. You say if they lose to Benetton, like the 23 that Ulster named to play Benetton, I would say you could that team could easily lose to Benetton. Benetton are a good team. A full strength Ulster 23, like, you'd back them to beat Benetton. I guess that's what I'm getting at. Maybe there's just a little bit of a caveat as we finish out the season now.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point. And yeah, you've got to have a bit of fortune. But I suppose everyone's dealing with injuries. And as we try to do with Munster when they're dealing with those injuries, you acknowledge them and then you're trying to assess the performance. And that's all you can do, really, because that's what they do internally. They're not sitting around now this week going, oh my God, Stephen Kitsoff is not here and James Hume. I'm sure they're concerned for them, but whoever is going to slot in there. And they have options in the back line. I know they're down a few bodies now at this stage, but yeah, totally, you're right. And it's always true. There's always, excuses is the wrong word, there's always reasons. And I think I mentioned it again. I can't remember who said this recently again about Eddie Jones and having the best players is the best way to be a good coach, and having all your best players available is the best way to be a good coach as well. And yeah, they could have done with a bit more luck, but for what they've had there, I still think the performance have been very patchy and very up and down by the standards they set for themselves.
Yeah, equally fair point, I think. Munster are heading to Johannesburg to face the Lions this weekend. They're 7-point favourites, actually, for this game, which doesn't necessarily surprise me, but I was curious as to how the bookies would see it, because the Lions are so exciting at home, so exciting in general, and obviously are coming off the back of a really big victory, kind of an easy victory in some senses against Leinster, so you'd imagine they'll be fresh enough, whereas Munster went to the bloody well to beat the Bulls. The extra week, or even having played 80 minutes at altitude, will stand to them. Looks like an absolutely brilliant game. I'm curious as to where you would see ways into this game for Munster. Like, if you're aiming to beat the Lions at Ellis Park, where do you actually start in terms of decommissioning some of their arsenal and getting at them to justify your favourite status?
Just don't drop the ball, because they'll score a try straight away. It's pretty simple. It's going to be thrilling, because these are the two teams who have scored the most tries from transition in the entire URC. They're the top two in terms of turnover or kick return attack. And sometimes it's different. Munster tend more towards, at times, multi-phase on the back of a transition. They're really good at getting into the Mike Prendergast attacking shape when there's a turnover. You can see they spend a lot of time in that kind of unstructured play in training, and just having quick turnovers of the ball and finding shape quickly. The Lions tend to be very quick in scoring. It is literally blink of the eye when they turn the ball over. But I think it makes for a really what should be a really thrilling contest. And again, it's cool. Munster versus Lions, you know, when this league as it is now was first came to life, you wouldn't think that that's a particularly exciting fixture, but it is. Lions have had a good few weeks. They gave Connacht a good beating and obviously gave Leinster a good beating, and they're going to feel like, again, they're one of the teams in that playoff hunt, that they're coming good at the right time. Munster, I saw the stuff from their media yesterday. They're drawing the same parallels as we attempted to on Monday in terms of the end of season run last year and things coming together at the right time. And that's definitely the talk within their camp, with players back fit, with what proved to be a really good selection last weekend, and how they used kind of key guys off the bench to impact the game with the altitude and managing that aspect of it. So yeah, there's definitely a nice bounce in the Munster group. And as you've said, with in terms of Ulster, they're getting the reverse at exactly the right time, to have Snyman coming back, to have your two starting wings back and a couple more as well. It's really timely. And yeah, as I said, after watching them beat the Bulls, a really tough place to win. Yeah, it's not a kind of team that you want to face with all their strengths back. And they have some exciting strengths. Like, you know, Snyman obviously at the forefront of that, but I think they even showed last weekend they can tailor things. It doesn't have to always be, and it's been maybe one of the criticisms we've had during the season, they've just been a bit slavish to, this is our way of playing and we're just going to keep the ball and keep the ball and keep the ball. But last weekend showed they can be a bit more flexible as well. So maybe we'll see another strand of that this weekend in terms of just, yeah, trying to limit the Lions' ability to maul you when you turn the ball over.
If you're tuning in from England, or if you don't have a horse in the race in the URC, this is a game to watch this weekend, isn't it? Like, the Lions, you mentioned like the transition stats, and I think it was their second or third try against Leinster, I can't remember off the top of my head now, but Marius Lowe, where he scores off Vandenberg's inside pass, like that entire move, it was one of those tries that just produce an involuntary noise from me. Does that ever happen to you, like where your actress is like, oh, like,
yeah, and yeah.
you're almost on your feet, you're like, Jesus, what have I just seen? And a game in which both teams can do that, because Munster are capable of doing that as well, it's going to be a lot of fun. Do you fancy Munster there, or do you think maybe the Lions might sting them?
Yeah, I do fancy Munster off the back of last weekend and the pep they have in their step. I agree on those involuntary sounds. I'm a devil for them, actually. And it doesn't matter what, I don't care what team it is. It's just seeing good rugby union. It makes me exclaim at times like that. And yeah, you're right. The Lions definitely, they have moments like that in their arsenal. So I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be a fun game.
Leinster have a point to prove to some extent. At least this travelling group does. They're heading to Cape Town to face the Stormers, who equally are wounded and may have a sting in their tail. They just lost at home to the Ospreys last time out, and obviously they have a very proud home record. Like, back-to-back defeats at DHL Stadium for them would be absolutely unthinkable, given the sort of culture and the fortress attitude that John Dobson has built there with his squad. Yeah, it's a great game as well, you know? Like, as we say, there are stakes in this for Leinster that may not have existed in past seasons at the equivalent stage. And Stormers are going to be gunning for them. Stormers are going to come out all guns blazing. What do Leinster learn from the Lions game? How much of it is even translatable to this game? What do you see in this one?
I'd say they've really clarified exactly how they're going to make up those last few meters. And I can imagine them spending a bit of time, even in the classroom, around their approach to scoring from 5-10 meters out and making sure they have momentum, making sure they have overloads, even in those tight channels. It's a really important part of the game that they're generally excellent on. They're really good at creating 3-on-2s in contact or 2-on-1s in contact close to the ruck and getting over the line, which they didn't manage to do with all that possession and territory against the Lions. Defensively, I'm sure, I think Nian Abber's maybe gone home. We haven't quite clarified that, but I'm sure he left them with a few kind of stinging reminders of what they should that he expects in that regard. So I'd be stunned if we don't see an improved Leinster performance. Again, really interested to see the selection, the team naming. I was under the impression that some of the players might have gone back after game one if they were going to be involved in the 23 for Saints. But I'm looking at the stuff they've put out in social media, even the videos and stuff, and it seems all the same faces are still there. So it'll be probably another strong team. And I think that that team last weekend was way better, should have been way better than what they put out on the pitch, despite the frontliners not being there. And Leinster have earned, because they've been consistent this season and because they're still in top spot, I don't have a massive issue with them using their squad. And I don't actually think it's that weak a team that they put out last weekend. Like, we always talk about the quality of their depth, and it should be delivering better performance than it did last weekend. So I'd expect them to come definitely out of the blocks quicker. They really kind of just left the game behind them in that first 20 minutes. And yeah, as you say, the Stormers are also looking to bounce back, and they're vying as well, and they're hotly in contention. So we could have two absolute whopper games from South Africa against the Irish sides.
We will preview them to some degree. Well, we actually might not, because we're going to do an AIL pod Friday. I forgot that. Looking ahead to Terenure against Corcon at the Aviva Stadium. So we won't have a typical sort of Friday URC preview. We'll swing back around to them on Monday and go through those games with a tooth comb. But for now, Mara, I'll leave you go. Thanks a million for all that.
Cheers, Gav.
Thanks everyone at home for tuning in and for all of your continued support. We will be back, as I say, on Friday with that AIL look ahead. And catch you then. Take care. Anyway.
Put the boys in the better land. You're always talking about the boys in the better land. The boys in the better land. Drivers got names for 50 double barrels. Spits out, grits out.